Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the channel. So today we're talking divorce and real estate, but did you guys know that over 70% of divorces involve disputes over real estate? That's a stat that I did not know until I started researching this conversation. So I wanted to bring on two experts, two top divorce attorneys to the channel so we can really break this down. Now, in my 21 years of being in the real estate business on the origination side, I cannot tell you how many deals that we have closed where it was a separation, a divorce, somebody buying somebody out. And most of the times, I ain't gonna hold y'all up, it's a complete nightmare, right? So this is an important conversation to prepare everybody. Cause look, you know me, guys, I talk about divide and conquer all the time when buying real estate. But one thing I will say, I never go into detail on how to protect yourself if you're going to do a divide and conquer, because life does life and people do break up, right? So this is a very, 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 very important conversation that I want to have with you guys. But first, I want you guys, everybody, like the video, share with 10 people, because all of you guys are going to need the information. If you're a real estate professional, you're definitely going to need this information. All right. So without further ado, I'm not going to sit here and blather because I want to get the information flowing as quickly as possible. I'm going to bring up the two top divorce attorneys to the stage right now. We got Brenda and we got Lanice. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Thank you guys for joining the program today. So let's do a brief introduction before we get started. Just introduce yourself real quick, Brenda, and then Lanice after you.
Hello, I am attorney Brenda Duran. I am a family and divorce attorney here in the Houston area. I am also on social media at Brenda's My Lawyer. Follow me there.
I am Lanice Lewis. I too am a family attorney here in Houston. Houston and surrounding counties. And you can follow me at Attorney Parker Lewis.
All right. So we got the introductions out the way. So let me do a quick disclaimer. Let's be very clear, y'all. This information provided in this podcast, Rants and Gems, is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. Listening to this podcast or using the information provided does not create an attorney-client relationship between you, me, and my guests and their law firms. Please consult a licensed attorney in your jurisdiction for advice regarding your specific legal situation. Nothing shared here is intended to create or imply attorney-client privileges. Long story short, you did not hire these women, okay? You are only here to learn. So do not say that you got the information and blah, 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 and they hired you or what, you hired them. No, okay? I just want to make that very clear. Everybody, we got a track on that. So I said I wasn't going to read the whole disclaimer. But as I started reading, I said, wait, this is actually pretty good. Let me read the whole thing. Let me not even like do any shortcuts with this. All right. So let's get the party started. The first question that I have to you is kind of like setting the stage before marriage, right? Laying the foundation for asset protection. So my first question is, what steps can individuals take to protect their real estate investments before assets? Brenda, you go first.
Man, that's a great question. So a lot of times people just don't know how their state laws work. And so one of the first things that you need to do before you get married is consult with an attorney in your state to kind of understand what divorce looks like. We always hear about people doing premarital counseling and stuff like that, but not a lot of people take the time to schedule an appointment with a divorce attorney just to get a better understanding of what they are getting themselves into. And so first and foremost, you know, consult with an attorney. Prenup. That is the best way to protect your asset, is to have an outline of what is going to happen in the event of a divorce. So people always turn their nose up at prenuptial agreements, but I always say a prenup is just like a will for your marriage. We hope that it lasts, right? But there is a 50% chance that it might not last. And, you know, you're going to either use the prenup that your state has, or you're going to create one that works for you that you're not going to be mad about if a divorce happens. So prenup, and also estate planning. So estate planning is a great way, creating trust, creating businesses that are in trust and things like that. Those are all good ways to kind of protect yourself and make sure that you know what you're getting yourself into before you get married.
Prenup. Everybody type in chat. Prenup, please.
We want prenups.
So, yo, Lanice, talk about that, right? You want to add anything to that?
Yeah, so what Brendan's saying is absolutely right. You need that prenup. And a lot of times people don't understand. They're afraid of prenups, right? They don't want to have this conversation about the prenup. It's an uncomfortable situation. But you need to consult with an attorney, because they can inform you of what you can put in your prenup. They can kind of break down prenups to you, let you know provisions that you can have in there. And so then maybe you're not so concerned about losing everything, or the other person not getting anything, but understanding that you have so much say, and there's so much, you can be very creative with your prenup. So definitely consulting with an attorney, getting the prenup, and making sure that you understand what the rights are and what will happen if you do not have that prenup.
So with a prenup, right? Because most, like you said, most people are scared of prenups, right? So what are some of the best ways that we should be looking at before marriage? Like, how do we set up these prenups properly to make sure that we go into marriage with the both of us on the same page?
Right. So that's also a good question. How you set up your prenup is also going to matter, right? There's no point in having a prenup that's unenforceable. And so obviously, when we do prenups, we have to have full disclosure of all assets, all liabilities. If you fail to disclose any of your assets, there could be a possibility that your prenup is unenforceable. The other thing, I know specifically in our state, we want to make sure, anytime I'm doing a prenup, I want to make sure that both parties are represented by counsel. You want to make sure that everybody understands what they're signing, what they're getting themselves into. I don't know if you remember, but I did a breakdown of Jeezy, and I can never get her name right. I did. And there was a challenge to the prenup. They actually ended up settling it, but timing is everything. You do not want to sign a prenup so close to your date of marriage, because someone can say that they were under duress, right? Mm-hmm. So it's always my recommendation to do a prenup anywhere between 6 months to 1 year in advance of the marriage date, in order to ensure that you have that enforceability. So full disclosure, being represented by counsel, and making sure that the timing is right.
6 to 12 months before marriage date, you should have your prenup in place. Now, let's just say within that, we do 6 to 12, let's just say a year out, right? We do our prenup, but within that year, I acquire more assets within that time, or more businesses. Do we now update this prenup, Lanice?
You need to update your disclosures. So the prenup is going to be in effect before you get married, right? So if you go and obtain more property after you've signed this prenup, entered into this prenup, but before you got married, you're going to want to go in and update your disclosures because you need to list out everything that you have prior to the marriage. Now, one way around that is that both of you all agree to waive the right to that, but that has to be written out. You can't, one person can't just say, oh, I don't want to know, or I'm not going to tell the other person what I have. You do have the right to go in and say that you're going to waive the disclosures. But if you are executing this document prior to marriage, and it's based on things that you have prior to marriage, and you've executed it so far out, then I think the best practice would be for you to go in and update those disclosures.
Now, Brenda, how detailed can these prenups be, right? Because I've heard stories here and there that it wasn't included, this wasn't done, or this didn't specify. So how detailed can one make their prenup agreement?
Listen, if I'm doing a prenuptial agreement, I want to be as detailed as possible because we don't want to open up Pandora's box to this prenup being challenged. I have seen some prenups that were just created by parties who were not represented by attorneys that just kind of define what their assets are. They don't really go into too much detail. And you open yourself up to an attack for that prenup to be challenged and essentially ruled unenforceable, because you have to. So this is a contract, right? You have to enter into this contract knowing what you're getting yourself into. If you just tell me, oh, I have a house, you know, in Texas, right? That's cool. That's a disclosure, right? But you didn't tell me this house was worth $3.5 million, right? You didn't tell me that. You didn't give me all of that information. And so if my office is drafting a prenup, we're trying to make sure that it is enforceable, and we're trying to make sure that we have full disclosure so that there is no opportunity for a challenge.
A challenge. What does a challenge mean, Lanice? Like, how do you challenge the prenup?
So let me tell you about Brenda, okay? So Brenda and I have been, we are friends, we are colleagues, and we have been opposing counsels. And so a challenge is when you're coming in and saying that there's some part of this prenup that may not be valid, or that this prenup was not executed with all of the correct formalities. And it's so funny because her and I have been opposite each other. We've been opposing counsel on a case where there was a prenup. The parties entered into it on their own without attorneys, and it could have risen to the level of a challenge per Attorney DeRowan, but we were able to resolve it. But it would have been an argument that I can understand being made, right? And us having me having to defend my position, because If the parties have not made sure that they did what they need to do, they have not went through counsel, and they've tried to come up with something on their own, then there's a chance that they have missed something. They've missed something that might be crucial to making that enforceable, or making some part of it be enforceable. It can be challenged because you have provisions in there about who's going to have custody of your child. And in Texas, we those are void. You cannot determine who's going to have custody of a child in a prenup. So there's different reasons, but it's always best to go through an attorney, because if you try to do it on your own and then you hire the attorney when you're in the divorce, then you end up in a situation with Attorney DeRowan over there challenging your prenup.
Hold on. Folks out here doing their own prenups without legal advice?
Yeah, they're doing it through legal.
Is real.
Yeah.
Folks, look, my people, don't use LegalZoom for everything.
Or ChatGPT. Don't even do it. It is cheaper to hire an attorney to draft a prenup than it is to get yourself in a situation where you are possibly losing everything that you thought you were protecting, right? Mm-hmm. And spending money on an attorney. We are expensive. I don't think people talk enough about how expensive it is to get a divorce. I think we're up there with the cost of an actual marriage.
Yeah.
Damn.
With the wedding.
Let's talk about that, right? Like, since we're on that topic, right, we're talking about the cost of all of this. Like, how much does a prenup cost someone?
I would say it depends on the level of complexity, right? So I've done prenups, they don't really have nothing, $1,500. But if you are talking about high asset, high network individuals where we really have to go through and consult with financial advisors and kind of get a better understanding of what you're signing off to, and we are negotiating, the reason I say 6 to 12 months is because we got to negotiate this thing. You're not just about to hand me a piece of paper and I tell my client, oh, okay, this is what you want to agree to, let's sign off on it. Mm-hmm. I'm almost certain your first offer is not going to be accepted. It can go up to 30,000. I don't know. It just really depends on how much and how complex the estate is. But I would say reasonable, the everyday person, you're probably going to spend about $1,500 to $5,000 on a prenup.
Which is cheaper than a contested divorce.
Yeah.
It's cheaper. It's cheaper to keep it, they say, too.
Sometimes,
right? All right. So we got that. Do you guys understand? Because we did a whole like mini masterclass on prenups right now, right? Type in chat. Do you guys have a better understanding of prenups, how it works, how to set it up, cost of it, etc.? Type it in chat, yes or no. Let's move on. Go ahead.
I was just going to add to that. So the ways to challenge is unconscionability. So you can't just enter into an agreement and it only benefits you, right? This, you have to give value. You have to give something in order for a person to enter into a contract. That's contract law 101. So you can challenge it based on unconscionability. You can also challenge it based on failure to disclose. And you can also challenge it based on duress, meaning, hey, we getting married next week and you just brought this prenup on me. We've already sent out wedding invitations, my people on their way, and I feel like I just have to sign this, right? And so that could be a situation of duress, or it could be you held a gun up to my head and said, if I don't sign this, you know, you're going to kill me. So obviously that would be duress. So those are ways that people challenge a prenuptial agreement.
That was a gem. Throw some gems in the comment. I'm glad you just broke that down. You see the conversation? The conversation we had yesterday, that was it, right? Y'all see what I'm talking about? That was it. I love that. All right, let's move on to the second topic, right? Let's talk about managing real estate and financial risk while you are married, right? So what are some of these do's and don'ts of buying property together during a marriage?
Don't buy it together before you get married. First and foremost, after you get married, don't add someone's name to property that you had prior to marriage. If you're going to, refinancing. If you are going to buy property with your funds that you had prior to marriage, make sure you can account for where those funds came from at all times and show that those were your funds prior to marriage, during the marriage, so that in the event of a divorce, you may be able to have a claim for reimbursement of that property, that those funds or property that you had prior to marriage, and get some kind of reimbursement for that.
How do we document it properly, right? So, all right. So the things I researched so far on this topic, if I'm married, right, and I have my income, and let's just say we have a joint account, but I'm the one who's putting the money into this joint account. Now I use that money to buy the real estate. It's technically that was marital money, although it was my money.
Can I curse on this podcast?
Huh?
Can I curse on this podcast?
Absolutely. Curse away. Fuck it.
You done fucked up. You fucked up now.
Wait a minute. So putting your money in a joint account with your spouse and using that money, that quote unquote marital money, even though if it was all my money or her money, you done fucked up. You co-mingled it, basically.
So let's clarify one thing. There is no such thing as his and hers when you are married. No. Okay. You don't have a damn thing. She don't have a damn thing. We have. Okay. And so if it's marital money, right, then it really doesn't matter what you do with it because it is marital property. The problem is when you use the money that you inherited from your mom, or you use money that you had from your IRA or 401k before you got married, and now you're trying to build a life with somebody. Now you're co-mingling and you done fucked up.
Yeah.
Damn.
To answer your question earlier, some things not to do. Do not use your separate property funds to do anything with the community property unless you are willing to just be done. Like not ever have it, get it back, not ever ask for a claim for reimbursement. Just don't do it. You should never co-mingle your separate property with your community property. In fact, you should have a separate account for your separate property and never put any money that is related to the community property in that account whatsoever. The moment that you do that, you done fell into my trap.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Sorry. I just want to make sure I'm clearly understanding this. I purchased 5 properties prior to me marrying you. Those 5 properties has its own bank accounts. All that money that generates income from those property goes into those bank accounts. Those are my bank accounts prior to marriage.
That's my, you don't, my.
Ain't that's no not money. Your money. That's the income money that you're earning during, the property is yours. The income that you are earning from that property is community property. And so that is y'all's, that's y'all's money that your property is earning. So you don't, it's not your money. It's you y'all's money. Yeah.
So income from separate property is community property.
Yeah.
Even
the property is yours. It's yours.
So the income don't follow the property is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Even though the income was established prior to you even coming around.
It wasn't established. You had a contract that said that you would get some income because you have a tenant in there, but you didn't start receiving that income until you got married to this person. So that is community.
But what if I was receiving the income years before I even married you?
Well, that's your separate property, but that income that you start receiving while you're married is community property.
Okay, no, that's separate and apart. So I'm talking strictly, I own these properties. It was getting rental income prior to us getting married, right? It's documented on tax returns, the whole 9 yards, that this was mine.
The moment,
and it could be yours too. It's the same thing.
The moment you get married, there is no such thing as mine. There's no such thing as this income was generated before marriage. So you put a pause. So you get married today, right? And you had these separate properties that were generating this income, and you've been having this train moving a long time ago. Okay, you get married today. Tomorrow, the income from that is community property.
Is that only for community property states?
Yes.
So that's not for. So what are the community property states? Like, do you guys have a list of that?
I think there like 10 of them. There's Texas, Nevada.
Not Texas. It's
community property?
Yeah.
There's, I believe there's about 10 of them. I don't know them off. Brenda, you know off the top of your head? I don't know them off the top of my head.
Texas, Georgia, I believe California.
Versus the common law states where the title is going, whoever has the, whoever's prop name the property is in, that's who owns it. But in Texas, there's a few of us, but we're the ones who, if you earn it during marriage, whatever it is, that is presumed to be community property. Without that prenup.
Wow. So, all right. Community property states.
It's 9 states. It's Arizona, California, Idaho, Louisiana, Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, Washington, and Wisconsin.
Wow.
Out of 50 states, 9 of us.
Not play by these rules.
Yeah.
Right. So the community property states are basically saying if you was getting money prior to you owning property prior to marriage, it doesn't matter. Once you get married, what's yours is hers and what's hers is yours.
No, not
your property is yours.
Property is still yours.
But the property, so the equity in the property is still 100% mine.
Well, was it paid off before you got married?
What does that What does that have to do with anything?
Then the ink, where are you getting the money to pay off this property?
The tenants are paying rent, and that's the money that's used to pay the mortgage.
And now that's community property that's paying the mortgage.
Yeah. So the community has a claim for, potentially has a claim for reimbursement because you use community funds from your tenants who were residing in your separate property. You use the community funds to pay down that mortgage. And so you have taken you and your spouse's money that you were earning it, but it was y'all's, and you've now taken that and used it to pay down the principal on your separate property. So however much you've reduced that principal on your separate property, so say the mortgage was $400,000 at the time that y'all got married, you've been using rental income to pay it down, it's now $200,000. The community estate, so you and your wife or spouse, whatever, over here is one unit, potentially has a reimbursement claim for $200,000 because that's how much you've reduced the principal on your mortgage on your separate property.
And there's a few ways to do those calculations, but the good news is once you get divorced, that income now is back your separate property.
Yep.
During the time of marriage,
yeah,
is this so the same thing with your job, right? As an attorney, if I get married, the money that I make as an attorney, even though I've been running this business since, you know, before the marriage, any income from my job is considered community property.
All right. So
you become one. You become one.
I need some gems from y'all right now. Right. If you live in the community property, how can a man or a woman who has assets, earnings, you know, they're doing their thing prior to marriage, how do we protect ourselves if we live in a community property state, if we get married to someone and then go through a divorce? How do we protect what we had previously to them?
So it is.
We don't lose them.
It is protected. Separate property is defined as any property acquired before the marriage or by gift or by inheritance, right? And so your property is going to continue to be your separate property and it is protected. The issue that you're going to have is the income, or if you have entered into this marriage and your property isn't fully paid for, right? Those are the issues that we are referring to and talking about. Or you've commingled your separate property so much with the community property that it's lost your value. The way to protect that is you don't like the law, draft a contract that changes it. This is Texas's prenup, right? Or any other community property state. This is the prenup they give you called the Texas Family Code. You can change that by saying, you know what? I don't like that. Let's say that this is my separate property and any income from that, anything that I put towards that will continue to be my separate property and you will never have a claim for reimbursement. You can do that and that's perfectly okay. It's advisable. So you can do a prenup if you're not married. I mean, if you are married and you're like, man, I don't like that, you can also do a postnuptial agreement.
What's a postnuptial agreement? Explain.
Post-marriage. Yeah. you are entering into this contract now after you've actually gotten married.
And so the thing with those, some of the challenges with those postnups is that it's a postnup because you're entering into it after marriage, but you are now trying to get the other person to convert what is community property to separate. So imagine you're asking someone after you've married them to sign an agreement that says that I know that because I didn't have a prenup, this is community property, but now I want you to sign this agreement that says in order for us to stay married or whatever, that this is going to become my separate property. And so you can see how that could create an issue, right? Who wants to go ahead and sign something like that after the fact? You're asking them to give up they'll do it sometimes.
Cheaters.
And I've had a situation where someone kept threatening to leave and kept threatening to leave and say, I'm going to take everything. And the only way my client would stay married to them is if they signed a postnup, because my client wanted to go into some different business ventures. and felt like you keep threatening to leave and take everything, but I want to work on this marriage. And if you're going to do that, I need you to sign this agreement so that I don't run the risk of staying with you and you leave and take everything, because I could literally just get out of it right now. But it's harder to, I think it's generally going to be harder to get someone to sign an agreement after you've married them, converting what was what they had, what they were entitled to, basically saying, no, I'm okay with giving that up and saying that that's just going to be your property.
So when should couples like consider doing or creating a post-nup, and what should it exactly include in that?
I would say, I mean, it doesn't matter. Anytime after marriage, if, I mean, either post-nup or prenup, both parties have to agree to it. So if you have an agreement to do something, or say you're about to inherit some property and it's maybe not all the way paid for, but you and your spouse have an agreement that, listen, I don't want nothing to do with this property. I want you to do what you need to do with this. Then you can enter into a post-nuptial agreement. It's all about what the parties are going to agree to. So there's no time frame. You can do it the day after you get married because you forgot or you didn't have the time to do the prenuptial agreement. And because you are afraid of the time frame, right? And you don't want to risk it being unenforceable later on. You can do it shortly after marriage, but there is no time frame of when you can do a postnuptial agreement.
Okay. So, all right. So we got like, you know, almost 200 people watching this live. I need you guys to like this video, share it with 10 people. And if you're getting some great information from these queens today, throw some gems in the comments. I want to switch to like the business owners, right? Because we live in an entrepreneur spirit world right now, especially in the Black and Brown community. So what are some steps that business owners can take to protect their business and their assets of the business from being included into the marital property?
I love this question because I love to attack a case every which way that I can. Like, I'm coming for you. So The problem that we have is people aren't true business owners. People want to use their business as if it is their personal account, and they want to pay bills out of this business account, and they don't really structure themselves in a way to protect the LLC. So you or whatever corporation it may be. So a lot of people think that just because I've established an LLC, it is protected. That's not 100% true. We have a thing called piercing the corporate veil. And what that means is you have commingled your business with your personal life so much. You have ran this business as if it is, or used this account as if it's your own money. Now I'm going to have access to this business and I'm going to pierce the corporate veil and treat it as if it is you alone and not the entity. So a lot of times when I see that, and don't forget, we can include the LLC in the lawsuit of the divorce. I've done it multiple times. I can sue you in your loss in your business.
Damn. You're lethal. Shit. Wow. You're suing people and their business?
Yeah. Yeah.
God.
Try to hide money. People try to, you know, do a lot of things. And for the most part, people are not running their businesses correctly. And I think that any attorney who includes the LLC and get access to business bank statements, they see that, hey, you're not paying yourself a monthly salary, or you're not paying yourself a salary. You're paying for things as if this is your personal account. And because of that, I'm going to pierce the corporate veil.
And it's that simple. You literally start looking at transactions. You're taking trips. You're going to the salon. You're going to get your nails done. You're paying for your Netflix. You're paying, you know, all kind of stuff that has nothing. You're paying your mortgage, things that have nothing to do with that business. But yet you want the protection of it. The court is just going to disregard that if the attorney requested and can show sufficient evidence that that's what you're doing. You have an LLC or you have whatever entity you have, and it's just a name, then the court can just disregard it.
Damn. So, all right. <there's->
So run your business like your business. Don't use your business for personal things. Everybody thinks, oh, I want to put it in my business name, then it's going to be a tax write-off. Okay, cool. But if you do that and then you go into a divorce or any other kind of situation. And now people have access to your financials that you believe were from your business, but you've been treating it like it's your personal. So the court is going to treat it like it's your personal.
And another thing to add to that, I know we're talking about property, but you know, and a good example of that is, you know, when you file your taxes, there are all these federal exemptions and things that you can do. Oh, this was for a business trip. This was for marketing. In our courts, reasonable and necessary business expenses. So if you are reporting $70,000 as your income, you know, with the IRS or whatever, but yet we see $500,000 coming into the account and you're writing off all these expenses, the court is going to say, what is reasonable and necessary? Was it reasonable and necessary for you to have 100 trips in this year? Like, really prove that to us, because if not, we're going to use that higher number to calculate your child support. And I know we're not getting into child support, but it is a part of the business. And so I just wanted to make sure I threw that out there.
Wow.
Yeah. And Brenda, with those exemptions and all of those write-offs, we're literally going through one by one. We're looking at those. Okay, you said you spent this, like you said, on advertising. Well, who did you pay for advertising? You know, show us where you spent that on advertising, because everybody likes for people to do their taxes. And I spent this on this and this. Okay, well, let's talk about it. When you get on the stand, these are your taxes. You should be able to tell us where that money went. It was on advertising, but who did you pay for that? Who did you pay?
We will audit your ass on
the stand. Yeah, right there on the stand. Yeah.
Golly. Yeah. I don't know about y'all watching this right now, but boy, y'all some good attorneys. I could tell. Like, y'all making me sweat right now. And I'm just like, goodness gracious. Like, wow. This is some good, helpful information so far. So basically, if you're a business owner, you just got to run your business efficiently, effectively. Make sure you can document everything, because what you guys mentioned is probably 80% of the people who's going to watch this, right? They use your business accounts, like your personal, your business credit cards, paying for your trips, you're writing it off, this, that, and the third. But if you know, and let me ask you this, in your prenup, can you specify in the prenup about your businesses as well?
Yeah. Anything is up to grabs. The only thing that you really cannot do in your prenup is discuss custody of kids, discuss kid issues. You cannot include that in your prenup. And, you know, there's a public policy reason for that. But anything can be included. I've seen pup nuptials in there. Like, who's going to get the dog? Like, we can get really specific in a prenup or a postnuptial agreement. So you can, that's the beauty of a prenup. You can do what you want. You can do things that the court cannot do. Yeah. Like, you can get super creative.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about this. Bad credit, right? Or credit, if somebody has, one of your partner has bad credit or a lot of debt, right? Like, how does one partner's bad credit impact the other spouse going through a divorce or in a situation?
So let's look at property, right? So if someone has bad credit and you all are trying to get property, and so you end up putting it in maybe both of y'all's name or one spouse's name, and then you're going through the divorce specifically, there's an issue of who, if anyone, is going to keep that property and whose name is on that property. And so what can happen is you can have a situation where one person is wanting to keep the property, but the property is financed in someone else, in the other spouse's name, or their name is on it. Now, we have documents that you can complete to try to show that, you know, one person is responsible for paying the mortgage on that. But the issue is that you still have that mortgage. The mortgage company has entered into a contract with you and that other person, and they are not bound by a divorce decree. So unless they are willing to allow that other spouse, who may not have, you know, the best credit, to assume the mortgage or refinance it, then now you've got to look at a situation of like, what do I want to do? My name is still going to be on this. I'm going to be banking on them paying the mortgage. If they don't pay the mortgage, it's still going to affect my credit because the lender entered into an agreement with me as well. So I think you just need to be really conscious of the purchases that you're making when you're in a marriage with someone who has bad credit, because when you're dividing that property in a divorce and you want to say, well, this person, they can keep this property, you're going to be left trying to figure out, well, do I really want them to keep the property if ultimately I'm responsible for it?
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And the only way to even try to get my money back is to come back to the court and bring another suit and hire an attorney again to try to have me indemnify or have me reimbursed basically for money that I've had to spend because they don't pay their debt. So I think you need to be very conscious and cautious when purchasing property in a marriage and one spouse doesn't have good credit or decent credit.
You want to add to that, Brenda?
Listen, so we're in the new year and everybody's doing their, you know, New Year's resolutions or whatever. I feel like people get married and they just forget, like, yo, I need to be checking in on you and seeing what you got going on. So if you go to the link in my bio, there's a yearly couples financial checkup that I encourage everybody who is married to do. We need to be pulling credit reports. We need to be talking about financial goals. We need to be disclosing debts and things that we have, because you don't know what you don't know. I don't know. You think you know everything about your husband or your wife, but until you go through a divorce, you know, you just don't know. One of the first things that I ask anytime that I do discovery, which is like the evidence exchange portion of a case, is I ask for a credit report. I want to see how much debt you've acquired so that we can really analyze what it is that we're going to be asking for. And so just like we said, community property is any property acquired during the marriage. That includes debt as well. So sometimes it weighs itself out. Right now, within the past 2 to 3 years, what we've been seeing is people have businesses and they have very lucrative businesses. But guess what? They have this huge ass SBA loan that they got. And so although you might be entitled to this business, you might not want to touch it because you have to take the debt with the asset. And so I would say just always check annually as much as you can on each other. Pull a credit report. Say, hey, babe, it's the new year. Let me see that report. Here's my report. Are not surprised when you come to me. You'd be surprised how many people get mad at me because they spouse have debt. I'm sorry, babe. Like, you was married to this person, not me. Yeah, you didn't know.
You have to divide it.
Maxing out Amex cards. Like, I'm sorry. Like, y'all are one, and you know, you're gonna take this debt just like everybody else.
Yeah.
That's good tips right there. Very good tips. So let's talk about, all right, refinancing. What are some of the risks that come with refinancing a property during marriage?
Lanice, you know that's yours.
Oh, okay. So when you refinance with someone, then you're now adding you have to figure out if you're adding their name, or realize that you're adding their name to the debt, right? So it's your property, but if you're adding their name to it, then you may be opening yourself up to that person saying that they have a claim for that. Now you have converted that property by adding them on there. So you need to be very careful when you're going through a divorce when you're married and you're refinancing your separate property. Another thing is, like, if you have separate property and you think there's going to be a reimbursement claim. I've had a situation where someone thought they had a reimbursement claim, but the spouse had been married before and just kept refinancing the property throughout the marriage. And so when they want to look and figure out, like, how much of the principal was paid off, not a lot of the principal was paid off because he continued to just refinance that. And so there was nothing for the other person to be able to have a claim for. So making sure, I mean, look and make sure that you're not adding, that your spouse is not at just refinancing property, especially if it's separate property prior to. You're going to want to be aware of what was that principal balance when it gets refinanced. You know, you get all of that in your closing, in your HUD statement, all of that. You can see what that payoff amount is. You're going to want to keep track of that for any claim that you may potentially have. And if you are a person who it has your separate property, you're going to not, you don't want to refinance and add somebody on the mortgage of your property that you had prior to marriage, because now you're doing that thing we talk about with commingling.
Okay. I like that. Good breakdown of that. Man, you guys are going crazy with this conversation. I'm sitting here just like, my brain is just like, whoa, this is a lot, right?
It's a lot. People do things out of love, and then they end up finding out that, you know, when the love dries up and it's time to go to the divorce court, you're sitting over there wondering, like, how did I end up in this situation? Why do I have to divide this? I did this because I thought we were going to be together forever. And I mean, that's just not the reality now. And the judge can't divide the property based on what you thought y'all were going to do, you know, forever.
Okay. So what is tracing, and how does it protect your property in a divorce?
So tracing is just a theory that, you know, in order to prove something is your separate property, or to prove where something came, where finances or money came from, to prove to the court. Usually this is when people are trying to prove that this is their separate property. They use a tracing method. Attorneys, we try to trace, but usually you're going to need an expert to do that. You're going to need a forensic accountant or somebody to help you trace. But say, for example, you had an inheritance, right? And you put that inheritance to the purchase of a property. And you need to be able to prove to the court that you did that. You would need to be able to trace where the funds came from and where they went, how that property was purchased, in order to prove that this is your separate property. So that's what tracing is.
Okay. Following the money.
Okay. So let's go into this one, right? Because I think everybody kind of goes, like, they'll call it girlfriend, wifey, or that's my husband, right? And they're not technically married, right? So let's talk about common law marriage. How does this affect property rights?
Like, did you see Rihanna? Did you see, what's his name? ASAP Rocky's attorney say that Rihanna was his wife in court. And I was like, hey, y'all might better be, you know, cautious about that. Yeah. So Texas and a few other states acknowledge what we call common law marriage. This is basically an informal marriage where you do three things. You agree to be married, you live together, and you present yourself out as husband and wife. So where people find themselves messed up is they're like, that's my husband. That's my, you know, that's my wifey. That's bad. That's, you know, we married. We, you know, we go together. We married. We like a married couple, right? Then you see people filing joint tax returns. Then they be moving in with one another. And so when you have that mixture, adding people on their health insurance, all of these things, right? When you have that mixture, then the court's gonna say, oh, y'all acting married. Y'all are married. Y'all want to play house. This is what you get when you play house
and you get a divorce.
You have to go through a divorce.
Yep. And now both of y'all are trying to figure out, when did we get married? Because I'm saying we've been together for 10 years, and you're saying, well, we were only married for 2 years. So you have the complexity of trying to figure out when did y'all become common law married. But at the end of the day, you have to get a divorce. You don't break up from a common law marriage. You have to get a divorce the same way as if you had a formal marriage.
And how many years do you have to be with someone for them to consider it common law?
Time frame. It could be 3 days. We was married for 3 days. As long as those three things are in place, y'all live together, y'all presented yourself as husband and wife, and there was an agreement to be married.
And you are not married if you are engaged. People will try to use that, like, when they've been together so long, they've been together for years and they've been engaged for years. And then when they come and they just can't believe it's over, because maybe they purchased property together or something. So now they're like, I'm common law married to this person. And then they say, we're engaged and we're supposed to get married on this day. It's like, you're not married to them then. If y'all have are engaged, then that is proof right there that you're not married to them. Yeah, regardless of y'all calling each other husband and wife and all of that, if you can acknowledge that y'all are engaged, be it a 5-year engagement or whatever it is, that is proof that you are not common law married to them.
So you got to be careful, man. Don't date divorce attorneys. I'm trying to tell you. I could have got his ass.
I love my husband, but I never called him hubby or nothing. I've never done that with anyone. I've never called anyone my hubby or anything like that as a term of endearment prior to me actually, you know, having a husband. Prior to that, I'm not calling you that. And it has nothing to do with affection. It's just, when you are my husband, then I will call you my husband.
And so everybody, people have it right. Like, don't play house. Don't be acting like a wife to a person that's not your husband. Don't be acting like a husband to a person that is not your wife. That's not just something that they're saying. There are legal ramifications for doing
it. Wow. This has been a lot, y'all. This has been a lot of information so far. Great conversation so far. Let's talk about this, right? If you have trust in, you know, estate plan and stuff set up prior to marriage, then you get married and all of your stuff prior to marriage was in your trust, but you never updated it to put your wife in the trust, but now you're going through a divorce. Like, can the property and assets that's technically owned by the trust be part of the divorce?
So it depends. An attorney's favorite answer. So we
it all depends, huh?
Depends. So we need to establish whether it's a revocable trust or an irrevocable trust. If it is a revocable trust, then yes, it could become a part of the community estate. But if it is a irrevocable trust, then it is going to continue to be your separate property. And so what happens a lot of times, so family law, a lot of times people like to practice family law because we intersect with so many different things. And so anytime I have a case that has estate planning or something like that, I'm going to refer to an estate planning attorney to kind of break it down to me to a point where I understand and can advocate for the client. But the first thing you want to establish is this irrevocable trust or is this a revocable trust?
Interesting. And if it's a I'm not going to do, because we can go too deep into the whole trust.
Down another rabbit hole.
Because I'm about to ask something, but I just caught myself. Like, you know what?
As easy.
Let me just leave it at that.
Now you just heard this divorce attorney saying that whenever we start dealing with these estate planning tools, that we refer to an estate planning attorney to go down that rabbit hole because it can get very convoluted.
I hit him with that above me now.
And that's why I held off on it, because I'm like, I had a follow-up. I'm like, you know what? Never mind. Because this could be a whole different conversation, and we really need somebody who really specializes in that, because to really set it up the proper way to protect. So far what I'm hearing in this conversation, right? If you're not married yet, and you're dating someone, you're serious, and you plan on getting married to them, and let's just say you get engaged to them and you know the wedding is a year or more, that's when you should really start doing your financial plan. Because marriage is a business. This is all I'm hearing right now, that this is a business decision that you're making to partner with someone for the rest of your life, right? And you have to make sure that all T's are crossed and I's are dotted accordingly. So plan out your prenup. Once you get engaged, at least a year out, make sure you are including everything that you don't try to hide nothing, right, on both sides. Because then if you run up against, you know, Brenda or Lanice, they're going to challenge you, right? And they're going to start tracing and doing all types of stuff. And they're going to find out you've been hiding.
With the terminology.
You know, I'm learning something. I'm picking this stuff up, right? So if you divide and conquer, ladies and gentlemen, you're buying real estate and you're co-mingling your funds together to help each other build the portfolio and everything like that, you need to have some sort of agreements and hire an attorney to get these agreements together for you. Don't do the LegalZoom way, because it could come back to backfire you. And then when you get married, make sure that you don't commingle your money. That's the most important thing that I've learned here. Don't commingle your money, right? Because then once you start commingling money,
your separate property.
Yeah, man. We want to make sure you have an understanding because I think me and Brenda both feel like you're not understanding it's not your money. The money that you had prior to, if you're saying you're not gonna touch that money at all, or you're not, if you're saying don't mix that money, the money that you had prior to, but the money that you're earning afterwards, even if you were earning it before, is not your money anymore.
So, all right, let's get back to that. All right. So if I make $2 million a year right now, hypothetically speaking, and then we get married and I start making $20 million a year.
We make $20 million a year. No, you make
$20 million. What if I put in my prenup that any money that I make is mine?
In a community property state, it's ours. It belongs to the community. In a separate property state, that will continue to be your separate property.
Yeah. And if you put it in the prenup, what you just asked, then it's yours. But if you don't put it in the prenup, then we make $20 million a year.
We got that bag.
Yeah.
Hey, so look, crazy.
Hey, Pookie, you sure you want a divorce?
You know they say it's cheaper to keep her. Now I'm starting to understand this. Whoever said that must have lived in a community property state.
Must have not had a prenup.
And must have, one, they lived in community property, and two, they didn't have a prenup. Whoever came up with that term, is cheaper to keep her, those two things had to come into play. Because thank God I live in New York. First and foremost, shout out to New York.
Right? But then they hit you over the head with that alimony.
Oh, Lord. We didn't even know that.
Because we don't really do that.
Conservative with alimony because it is a community property state. But, you know, you see, y'all, it's good and bad. You can also, in a prenup, choose the state, right? Laws that you would like to use. Mm-hmm. So we can get married here in Texas, live here in Texas, and we can say in the event of a divorce, we're going to follow New York law.
Put it in the prenup.
Put it in that prenup. I'm signing a prenup. Listen, I need a prenup.
You need a prenup. Everybody needs a prenup. I'll say that. As a married divorce attorney, I'll tell you that everybody needs a prenup. The lawyers and all, we need the prenup.
You know, I'll be honest with you guys, man. Prior to this conversation, I wasn't thinking prenup because I plan on getting married. And, you know, and I'm just like, you know, if I'm marrying you, like, it doesn't matter to me.
It doesn't matter to it until it matters.
Until it matters.
So let me tell you how you make it the easiest way to go into this, because it's not an easy conversation to have. Just like planning your will is not easy to do, right? You don't want to sit there and talk about when you die and what's going to happen. Having a conversation with somebody about splitting up assets in the event of divorce is not easy. But if you sit down and have the conversation openly and y'all like talk about it, and it doesn't come across as if one person is making a demand, like you are gonna do this in order for us to get married, then I think that makes it much more palatable. Because if you're just saying you're gonna do this or I'm not gonna marry you, now it's kind of like, you know, you're backing me up against the wall. You're backing me in a corner. So I think y'all need to have a conversation about it and be on the same page about it. And when you're dating someone, you need to make sure that they understand that that's something that you will want. Because people can get so blinded by the love that then it becomes an insult to ask for that. You just need to go ahead, Brenda.
She would never do that. He would never do that. I know that he's not going to come for this. So my question, when I do my prenuptial consultations, listen, in the event of divorce, what would you like to see happen? What do you want to see happen? And what does your spouse have? Y'all had that conversation. What does she want to see happen? Because a lot of times it's already like written in law that's what's going to happen. You might be just tweaking the law. You have a prenup already. It is the family code book. That's your prenup. If you don't like it, redraft it. That's it.
Prenup for protection and peace. Shout out to Tiffany Banks in the comments with that one. A prenup for protection and peace. Everybody type that in chat, because this is it's an eye-opening conversation. And let's talk about this, right? Policy changes, the future of divorce. So Trump, obviously I came out talking about he wants to potentially change the divorce laws, right? So what do you think about that? I sent you guys the article earlier today. What do you think about what Trump is saying? He wants to change divorce laws.
So what he's referring to is getting rid of the at-fault divorce, or getting rid of people being entitled to 50% of another person's assets, which we've established is not necessarily that other person's asset. Trump, let me preference this, right now, today, as the law is written, he does not have the authority to come into each state and rewrite the law. The 10th Amendment says that anything that is not governed by the U.S. Constitution is reserved for the states per the 10th Amendment. Property laws, marital laws are governed by each state, which is why you have some states who are separate property, some states that are community property, right? And I mean, he can influence, he can definitely have influence. Unless the Supreme Court is going to change the 10th Amendment, I don't foresee that happening whatsoever. But there are a lot of conservative states that are trying to get rid of the at-fault reason because they feel like it's unfair to men. So Texas, we're in our 89th legislative session. We have House Bill 931, which basically allows people to enter into a covenant marriage. What that means is you go to the court, you sign an affidavit, you do counseling, and you say, basically, we're going to get married. This is a covenant marriage, and we are not allowed to get a divorce unless the other person agrees. And if we get a divorce, there is no such thing as an at-fault divorce. It's a no-fault divorce, and we're splitting everything 50-50.
Mm. Interesting.
Absolutely not.
Because what does that do to a woman who is, or a man who is being abused, or manipulated? I think it's just a slippery slope. But a lot of states are trying to get rid of the at-fault divorce. And I kind of agree, honestly. All of these at-fault reasons, people are not perfect, people are not human, and they should not necessarily be penalized unless it rises to just an extreme nature where, like, someone is being abused. I am in agreement with, listen, if we get divorced, let's split that thing 50-50.
Split it 50-50.
Yep. Is that a problem?
No.
No.
No. Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. Not at all. Attorney Brenda.
Like, 50-50.
No, I mean, look, this is how I look at it, right? If I'm going to marry you and we get married, there's obviously a level of trust that I have with you. Now, that trust can be broken, but if I'm going into a marriage, I don't want to like penny pinch my wife. That's just how I look at it, right? Like, if I'm out here earning at a very high level and she's doing what she needs to do to, support me mentally, physically, whatever it is that I need, then I feel as if, like, you know what? If I got it, then she should have it too.
She's providing value. She's providing a lifestyle for you, just like you're providing a lifestyle for her. And so I think people miss that point. Like, the only reason that you're able to do the things that you do, not only
what she's doing,
right, is because of what she's doing. She's holding down the fort. She's taking care of the kids. She's, making sure everything is taken care of so that you can go out here and be a high earner.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, right? And I think people, especially men, we kind of take that for granted when you have someone that's kind of taking care of these things. And it's always like, well, I bring this to the table. Like, I don't believe in all that shit. Like, for me, if I'm going to marry you, you're my wife, and I've never been married. I was in a long-term relationship with my children's mom, but I never was married, right? If I'm going to get married, to me, it's like, all right, I don't ever want to get divorced, me personally, right? One and done. That's just how I'm looking at it. So if we were to get divorced, and if I'm still in a great financial position, then you know what? As a man, I just look at it as, you know, I should hold you down.
Does that change if she cheats on you?
Huh?
Does that change if she cheats on you?
If she cheats on me, then all bets are off.
Well, listen to what Brenda just said. People are flawed and they make mistakes. And so I'm with you, Matt. I'm with you. If you cheat on me or whatever, then I feel like there's consequences.
There's definitely consequences.
But I understand what Brenda is saying, and that people are human and things do happen. And the crazy part that we see in divorces a lot is that people really think there's so much weight given to adultery. And I hate to tell you, in Texas, there's not a lot of weight given to that. So if your spouse was cheating with someone, and even if they got someone pregnant and had a child with them, you know, a child is a product of having sex with somebody. And so you don't get to like, I'm just going to clean them out. I'm going to wipe them out because they cheated on me. It's like, no, you may get a disproportionate split, but it's not going to be a landslide. Like, you're going to walk away with everything because this person cheated on you and had a child or something like that. So, I mean, even the courts don't consider it that big of a deal. So you kind of can't, even though I feel you, you kind of can't take that approach of all.
Hold on, you telling me the courts don't care if somebody cheats on somebody?
They care. I didn't say they don't care. It just is
not giving as much weight. So when we are consulting with people, they'll be like, oh, I want to take everything. I don't want him to have nothing. I don't want him to have nothing. But it's not like that. You might get 55% of the community.
Yeah.
You might get 60 if, like, you had a baby outside the marriage and you're doing too much, you may get 60, but it's not.
That's a good split. Yeah.
That's a great split. You're not about to get 99.9% of the community and leave this man walking with nothing. That's not how that works. Mm-mm. Or woman.
Let's be clear. The woman could be the go-getter and the breadwinner.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. Yeah. So that's not uncommon. And that's why I keep saying, like, I'm going back and forth, because I don't want this just to look at like it's a man's world in this. No, women are getting more money than some of these guys out here. And let's face it, women are buying more real estate than men right now.
Yeah.
So, like, women need to protect themselves as well with prenups and these agreements and making sure that they're protected and know the laws when you get into any type of marriage or long-term relationship. So I definitely agree. I love this conversation. I'm glad I chose to have this today, because I learned some shit tonight. You know, I'm not going to hold you up. I learned some things. And the most important thing I learned is that marriage is a business, period, point blank. You can marry someone because you love them and you trust them and everything like that, but you can't forget the business side of things, because as you grow and you accumulate assets together, you got to make sure you got a plan, because shit does happen, right? People fall out of love, people cheat, people do all types of foolishness, and, you know, people break up and they separate. So you have to have a plan in place prior, you know, pray for the best and plan for the worst.
Exactly.
Basically. All right, we over an hour now. I don't even feel like we've been speaking for an hour tonight. This is definitely going a lot faster than I thought. But I want to ask you guys this, right? As divorce attorneys, because obviously people in the comments are saying this all night, so I might as well address the elephant in the room. A lot of the guys too. They're like, yo, this is why you need to stay single, right? I don't believe that anybody should stay single and not get married because they're worried about money, right? Because to me, I feel like there's more important things. I think love trumps money, in my opinion. Like, I love love, me personally. So I say, no, you should get married. You should want to be with that person. What do you guys think? Should people stay single or should they get married?
I'm not in the business of telling people what to do. If you are a type of person that you feel like you don't ever want to get married, then please don't. Just don't. But there are many more people that want to get married and want to enter into the covenant of marriage with their spouse, because it is, in my opinion, a religious thing to do. I think we've gotten away from that. Although the business comes because the state gets involved, it is a religious commitment to God, in my opinion. Now, other people may think differently. And so, you know, I'm not going to tell people whether they should or should not get married. That's a decision that you have to make and you alone. And, you know, so be it. Don't ever get married.
I agree. I think that when you get married, you need to get married to the person that you feel like you can see yourself, not the person that, oh, I'm so in love with, but can I spend the rest of my life? Do I want to? Not can I, do I want to spend the rest of my life with this person, no matter what, the good, the bad, the ugly? And it's not just that you shouldn't just want to get married. It's like, I think it's the person you want to, that person should be someone that you want to be married to. I feel like that, I've never had one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait till I get married. It took a person. You know what I'm saying? So find your person. And if you and your person want to be married, then you get married. If you and your person just want to spend the rest of y'all lives together dating and that works for y'all without, you know, calling it a marriage, then do that too. But I'm like, Brenda, it's whatever you desire, but just make sure it's for some reason other than just to say that you are married, because there are a lot of married single people out here.
If it really is the money, then get a prenup. And if that person really cares about you, they don't really care what's in the prenup. I mean, she ain't gonna be my attorney, or I mean, he ain't gonna be my client, but they won't really care. And then you can go on your merry way. But I mean, everybody has to make their own decisions. But if it doesn't work out, give me a call.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right. So I'm not going to keep y'all long. We got a minute, an hour and 10 minutes so far. Everybody like the video. Throw some gems in the comments if you guys got some valuable information out of this conversation tonight. So I'm going to ask you both final question. Not even a question, right? You guys can just throw out a rant. What's your final piece of advice, or what's the most important advice that you can give anyone that's going to watch, that's watching this live right now or on the replay? What's the most important thing that you can tell people, couples going into marriage, currently married, about protecting their assets?
So I would say if you are getting ready to get married or you're considering married, understand the playbook. There is no point in playing a game when you don't know the rules, right? So consult with a divorce attorney. It may seem counterintuitive, but it's actually being proactive because you know what you're getting yourself into in the event of a divorce. Also, I didn't talk about this earlier, but make sure if you have separate property, if you have accounts and things before you get married, go ahead and get the statements for those accounts and put them into the cloud or give them to your mama, uncle, cousin, brother, sister, and protect them. Because what will happen in a community property estate is if you cannot prove that this was in your account before you got married, it is going to be deemed as community property. And a lot of times these entities don't keep this information for past 7 years. So that would be my recommendation. Don't co-mingle, get a prenup, and you know, live happily ever after.
Yeah, get comfortable with the uncomfortable conversation. So talk about the prenup, talk about what you all both would want in the prenup, talk about what y'all think would happen or expect to happen in the event of a divorce, so you can decide whether or not the prenup is worth you having that conversation. You may be okay with, you know, how the state would divide your property, but do have that conversation and just be comfortable with it, because you think you're uncomfortable now talking about it, you're going to be real uncomfortable if you go through a divorce and you're dividing property that you never intended to or never thought you would have to. So just get comfortable in the uncomfortable space, but have the conversation.
I love that. I love that. Bonus question. Bonus last question. I got to ask this one. I can't forget this one. This is for my real estate salespeople, right? How do we get business from attorneys like you guys, right? Because look, let's face it, 70%, the stats are 70% of people who are going to divorce, they have property that they got to split up. And most time they got to sell, they got to refinance, whatever the case may be. So what are some like tips to secure you guys or any attorney as a referral partner, whether you're a realtor or you're in the banking side as a lender?
So I love my real estate agents. I love my loan officers. I love my financial advisors, because we do rely on other, like they're in my contract. It says, listen, I don't do tax law. I don't give financial advice. I don't do that because that's not my expertise. I can get you divorced and I can walk you through what the law is. So for me, there's a link in my bio where you can be added to my referral list, because we have an obligation. We can't just force clients to go with a certain person, but we can provide them with a list of resources. A lot of times people want to keep their house and they need to be able to speak with loan officers or get pre-approval letters to prove to the court that they're able to refinance and get this house in their name only. So I love those people. Also, 80 to 85% of people will resolve their case in mediation, which is an informal but formal process. And sometimes they are so contentious with one another, they cannot agree to a real estate agent. What I do is I bring up that little list that I have of real estate agents and say, do your research, look into these people, talk with them and see who you like, and then come into mediation with a name, or let's just pick from this list. So financial advisors, there are a lot of people who just don't know what to do or what assets they need to take. We have a lot of stocks and bonds and IRAs and whole life insurance policies and things of that nature, where they need to really be able to analyze and figure out which property they really want so it makes sense long term, and to establish a long term plan on what's going to happen after they get divorced. So for me, just click the link in my bio, add yourself to my referral list, and that's pretty much how I do.
Yeah. And so for me, I have a lot of realtors that I interact with just on social. And also you've had Nicole Handy on your. Yeah. And so she's actually in my building on my floor. I refer business to them just because I've seen what they do. I've seen how they market themselves, the agents, and I've seen that I know that they're knowledgeable. Right. And so that means a lot to me. So looking at that and seeing these agents be knowledgeable and kind of just using social, you know, use it to showcase your skill set and your knowledge, that will have me going asking, hey, do you want to use this realtor or that realtor? Because I've seen the work that they do. So just market yourselves. Y'all have to put yourselves out there, market yourself, let people know what you do, show them that you know how to run the business that you claim that you run. And yeah, that I have no problem referring to different realtors based on what I've seen them be able to do or what they present that they can do anyway.
I love that. Put your brand out there. Show your expertise. You got intellectual property. Let the world know. I love that. All right, Lanice, tell them how to get in contact with you, how to follow you, hire you, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at Attorney Parker Lewis, which is on the screen now. You can also go to my website, which is parkerlewislaw.com. And there you can schedule a consultation. Consultations are required before we discuss a retainer or anything with your case. And so you can go to my website. You can follow me on Instagram. There's also a link in my bio on Instagram that'll take you to my website and allow you to schedule a consultation.
There you have it, Brenda.
Same setup. You can follow me on all platforms at Brenda's My Lawyer. You can click the link in my bio to schedule a consultation. We do require a consultation before we do speak with you. And also, you can call our office, 832-328-0791. We are open 24 hours for appointment scheduling.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Lanice, Brenda, thank you guys so much for joining the show tonight. Everybody drop some gems in the comments. These ladies came on here. I learned a lot tonight. Tracing, community property states. But most important, the word of the night, maybe the word of the decade, prenup.
Prenup. Yeah. Thank you for
having us. Prenup. Everything's about the prenup. Okay. Yep. So type prenup in chat. Make sure you follow them. And if you are in the great state of Texas and you need good attorneys, you have two to choose from, okay? And remember the disclaimer. Hold on. Let me get that back out. The disclaimer, this information provided in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute legal advice, okay? So if you want legal advice, you have to do a consultation and go through the process, all right? Thank you guys for joining me tonight. Guys, this video will be saved as always, and it will be uploaded on all podcast audio outlets. Just so download Rants and Gems, Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to. If you got value from this information, rate it 5 stars, leave a review. All right, that's all we got for you guys tonight. I'll be back tomorrow. I'm not going to be on here Thursday because I have things to do on Thursday. So we're going to come back tomorrow. and discuss more trending topics that's happening. All right. That's all we got for y'all. Peace.
Hey.
Bye.
Yeah, that was fucking.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.